Thanks for tuning in to the Harvest Focus. We've got Mr. Adam Holtz going to join us here in just a little bit, and he's going to discuss his brand new book that was just released, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. We're going to talk about that in just a little while. He'll join us on the phone. Right now, we want to make sure you are aware of all that's going on. It's been a great week here at Harvest Church. It's continuing to be a great week. If you're listening to it on the podcast, we have Brother Sky Graham preaching on Friday night at 7:30 p.m., March the 8th. If you're listening live on Harvest Radio Sunday morning, March the 10th, you still have a chance to hear Brother Graham as well. We have Brother Graham preaching on Sunday, March the 10th at 10 a.m. Do not forget daylight savings time. We do lose that hour. We spring forward, so we lose an extra hour on Saturday night. So make sure you make plans accordingly so that you get to church on time on Sunday morning. We got a lot of great things happening. We got family prayer coming up Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. We've got Midweek Refresh at 7 o'clock Wednesday night. And then we've got quite a few ladies going to the Tennessee Ladies Conference, the Tennessee District United Pentecostal Church Ladies Conference this week, Thursday through Saturday. So if you want to know more about the church, the best way to do this is to go to our website, harvesthumboldt.com. That's harvesthumboldt.com. You can also call our church office, 731-784-2246. Adam Holtz, coming up next. We are joined today with Mr. Adam Holtz, who is on the phone with us. And Adam, no stranger to the program. Great to have you, Mr. Holtz, back on the program with us today.
Thanks, Seth. I enjoy being on. I appreciate it.
We are talking today about Mr. Holtz's new book. He is an author. He's also the director of Plugged In, and he's going to talk to us today about a very familiar topic when we bring him on. It's talking about some tech, and he has just released a book that I don't want to steal all the thunder there. Why don't you give the title of the book first and where people can purchase this book, Adam?
Yeah, it is called Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, and if you just go to focusonthefamily.com, we've got a tab for our bookstore, and you can find it there.
Fantastic. We're navigating a world of media, and it's a wide variety of screens, from portable Nintendo, portable game systems, to phones and iPads. It seems like, Adam, our kids constantly have a screen in front of them right now, and it can be a challenging thing as a parent, because if we're not careful, those screens can become our babysitters.
Well, they really can be, Seth, and the point of this book is twofold. We want to talk about some of the implications of, you know, the fact that it feels like screens are now ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And
yes,
as much as we may want to think this is a problem that the kids have, you know, there's a lot of research that shows that parents get more screen time than kids.
I can believe it. Yeah.
This becomes an issue that we have to tackle as families. And so, you know, we've got some what I would call maybe left brain information on why that screen time is so important, how it influences everything from behavior to belief to biology. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to just scold people with information, right? We want to give some practical and concrete handholds to make real and lasting changes in this area if you feel like it's slipped out of control. And let's face it, you know, we all have those perfect parent friends that do everything right. And then there's the rest of us. And I put myself in that category. I've got a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 17-year-old. And and it's hard. So
yes, it is.
The goal here is not perfection. The goal here is intentional engagement and being aware of our habits and working on those together as a family, Seth.
In this media-saturated world, it's necessary for us to guide our ways through this with effective and productive ways. You know, we laugh and we say, you know, there's all the time screens in front of us. There are a lot of ways that these screens are productive, and we can use it for our good. And your writing on how to accomplish that is my understanding. I haven't had a chance, obviously, to read the book yet, but there's another. This is just they're claiming it's an expert piece of materials, what I read earlier today. It's being released here. Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, and this book answers questions. And let's talk first off, what are some of the effects that media are having in children's biology?
You know, the biology question is super interesting, and we often talk about behavior, but as we have screens more and more, you know, around, we are able to really make some observations on how that screen engagement affects us physically. And, you know, just at the most basic level, probably by now most people have heard of what's called blue light, which is really just a, you know, a shortened version of ultraviolet light. So just being on screen so much, it tricks our brains into making us think it's daytime. But if it's midnight, it's waking your brain up. So, you know, at the most basic level, it can affect our kids' sleep and affect our sleep as parents. And if we want to dive a little bit deeper, you know, if you've ever read anything about how screens affect us, there's the issue of dopamine. And dopamine is a chemical. It's a neurotransmitter. And it's kind of the feel-good chemical. And I'm oversimplifying here. But when we have a pleasurable experience, we get a little hit of dopamine in our head. And that is the chemical that's actually related to addiction of all kind, whether we're talking alcoholism or gambling or, you know, perhaps pornography. But even, you know, our little, we may not want to call it addiction, but our compulsive habits when it comes to social media, you know, when we jump on Facebook for us oldster parents and the kids are on Instagram and Snapchat and, you know, Be Real and all the newer ones, we get a little hit of dopamine and our brains get conditioned to that in such a way that we can become, you know, addicted is not too strong a word. And so that's another layer that we're seeing screens affect kids and adults biologically.
Yes, sir. We're talking to Mr. Adam Holtz today. Mr. Adam Holtz has just released a brand new book that you need to make sure that you get a hand on, and it's called Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. Adam Holtz is author of this book. He's also director of Plugged In. He's giving us some insights into this new release and answering some questions about how to navigate through what can be a very tricky subject. And Adam, we appreciate the time today. As parents, we want to be engaged, obviously, with our kids, and, you know, kids are turning to screens. How do you approach that in this book about becoming the screen savvy family?
You know, a couple of things. I think engagement means that we're aware of how we're interacting with screens. So at the most basic level, it means setting boundaries on screen time use in terms of where, what you're looking at, how much time you're spending, and just at the most basic level, not having our kids, you know, looking at screens in their bedrooms with their doors shut is a great starting place. But then we can talk about, you know, how much time we're spending on screens and what we're looking at. But I think engagement is bigger than just sort of putting those boundaries on it. It has to do with the bigger conversation of what are we engaging with and why? You know, what is it that's so compelling about that? And then shifting from at what I would call a passive consumption stance to an active engagement stance, it doesn't mean that everything we see on screens is bad.
Right.
But instead of just sort of mindlessly consuming it, maybe it means we have a family movie night once a week and we watch it together and we don't watch with phones in our hands at the same time. And afterwards, we're going to have a discussion about the ideas and the characters and the worldviews that we see there. And so what we're modeling for our kids when we do that is that active engagement as opposed to passive consumption. And then just looking for ways that we can, you know, as the business gurus say, get wins with our kids, that screen time can really be an opportunity to build relationship if there's something we can enjoy together. So, you know, you mentioned Nintendo Switch earlier. Maybe it's playing Mario Kart or Splatoon or, you know, a game like that. My son and I have played Pokemon Go on our phones for the last 6 years together, and it's been a great bonding experience. So it's not all bad. It's not all put the screens away, but we do advocate that intentional, you know, approach to it.
I got a 7-year-old little guy. He loves playing this dinosaur game. It's a Jurassic Park dinosaur game, and he can walk into the backyard, and supposedly there's a dinosaur there, you know, on your phone, and it has really, it's opened up me and him being able to spend a little time together as well, and I love it. I love it, and yet at the same time, you have to be careful that it doesn't rob either of us of time. You know, and it's not just kids that struggle with that, you know.
No, it's not, and I think especially with dads and sons, you know, this is kind of a subset of things.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes dads and sons, it can be a complicated relationship. And I've found that even just playing Pokemon Go together, even though it's a simple kind of silly game, you know, we're walking shoulder to shoulder as we catch these little things. And I mean, we have had some remarkable conversations because with guys, sometimes we need to be doing something else together to open up emotionally. And so
sure.
I think it can be a great opportunity for that.
It's fantastic. You mentioned something earlier, too, about, you know, watching movies together and without our phones in the hands. And it brought back up Dr. Daly's Christmas movie challenge. Do they have any plans to maybe see if they can get any kind of research on how many people took that challenge? Or is that just something that he just issued and just hoped people would come over with?
Well, I have not seen any data on that,
okay.
So I would be making something up if I could
sure.
said more than that.
Sure, I understand. It was a very interesting take during the holidays. You know, it was a great thing. I know my family did it, and it kind of has carried over after Christmas. Now we have something else that we're watching together, and both of our kids. I have a 7-year-old little boy and an 11-year-old growing up fast before my eyes, little girl, and. You know, it's opened up more movie nights for us just sitting down watching
yeah.
together. And it kind of started more family time that at first we didn't really think we had.
Yep. Well, that's exactly right. And I think what you find is once you start to change those habits, not only is it not that hard, but it can be a lot of fun to connect relationally. And, you know, teenagers, they tend to grumble and rah, 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 you know, I don't
yeah.
want to do that. But,
yeah.
but you know what? Once you get into it, they never say, oh, man, that was just a waste of time. I
mm-hmm.
wish we wouldn't have done that. Because even if our teens don't seem like it, they are longing for mom and dad to pay attention to them
right.
and to engage with them. And we have an opportunity to do that, but we have to put our own phones down and sort of take a look at our own habits in order to do that successfully.
That's right. And, you know, it actually has made it easier to get them into the living room. And before we watch that movie, we do our family devotion or whatever for the day.
Yep.
And it's really helped us all the way around. One more thing before I let you go today, Adam, and you talked about monitoring
yeah.
children's screens. In this day, that can
yeah.
be very difficult. Do you have any tips on how to do that well?
Well, you know, I think there are a couple different things. I think when our kids are younger, there's tons of different filtering software options for phones and for computers. We have here at Focus on the Family at various points recommended NetNanny,
uh-huh.
Covenant Eyes, and there's a newer one that's an Israeli company called Canopy that is really, it's really excellent, and it will work across different devices. And I think that those filters work especially well when our kids are younger in terms of preventing inadvertent, you know, keystroke problems that lead you to a difficult place. I think as our kids get older, you know, if you try to filter stuff out, it can sort of provoke that rebellious, you know, I want to find what you're keeping me from.
Yeah.
And at that point, I think our stance has to shift. Doesn't mean that we necessarily quit using them, but we shift into a more relational and conversational stance with our kids so that we understand what their interests are,
sure.
and begin to give them opportunity to make some of their own decisions. Because I think if we keep it all just completely clamped down until they're 18 or 19 years old, and then they go out into the world and they haven't had any chance to practice some of those things on their own, you know, it can be kind of a free-for-all. And so even though it's nerve-wracking to give your kids more freedom, I think we do that. And I think with social media, it, you know, hey, I want to be a friend on your social media page. I'm not going to lurk and embarrass you. But, you do need to have that ability to – pay attention to what your kids are doing.
Yeah.
And then I think that we've got to get into the harder conversations about sexuality, about pornography, about interacting with strangers, because the reality is those things are all out there. And our kids may or may not be super predisposed naturally to go looking for it. Some are, some aren't, but we want to keep those lines of communication wide open, and they can be uncomfortable conversations at first, but my wife and I have found as you just keep talking about it, it just becomes a natural part of, you know, you're engaging with their world. You're talking
sure.
about what their friends are looking at. And so it doesn't have to be super awkward.
Well, you know, you talk about having those difficult conversations. If you don't have those conversations, I'm afraid the curiosity would even be greater by the time they turn 18
oh, yeah.
or 19.
Well, yeah, and I think that we need to be modeling, especially with regard to sexuality, you know, what does Scripture say about God's intended purpose for this?
Yes,
because
sir.
The world says something else entirely, and the world is going to place more emphasis on that area of life than God even potentially intended. He didn't intend our entire identity to be built around that. And so those conversations come into play, whether we're talking about, you know, a Taylor Swift song, whether we're talking about an R-rated movie, whether we're talking about, you know, more explicit materials, you know, even whether we're talking about animated kids shows are having, you know, messages with regard to sexual identity. The culture is having that conversation.
Yes.
And if we don't have it, our kids are going to have it without us. And so we want to be able to shape that in a deep and biblical way.
So true. Because if we're not having it with them, somebody else is having it.
Somebody else is. That's exactly right, Seth.
You know, and I said this the other day in a sermon, God did not design government to raise our kids. He did not design schools and daycares to raise our kids. And those are both incredible resources for us, and they help us. They're supposed to support us. But he always designed for us as parents to fill that role. And if we're not having those conversations, I worry we're not doing what God designed us as parents to do.
Well, that's exactly right. And again, it's awkward at first.
Sure.
Honestly, true confession, my son and I had the birds and bees conversation while we were playing Pokemon Go, and I have never been more thankful for a game to distract us.
Yeah,
And the goal is not to get it perfect. We may not get it all right. Our kids may see some stuff. We find out that, well, we wish we hadn't seen it. They hadn't seen it, but then we circle back and talk about that. You know, we don't drop the punitive hammer,
right?
But we engage with them on that.
Let me ask you this too, Adam, before I let you go. This interview's went a little longer than I thought it was going to, and this is great. I appreciate you taking the time for us today. You talk about having the talk with our children, and, you know, it's easier for fathers with sons and moms with daughters, you know, to have that conversation. How do we as dads, you know... You don't skirt around the issue, but having that appropriate line. Where do you find that line when it's a dad talking to a daughter?
Well, I think that you can talk pretty frankly. I mean, I think that you want to know, especially that mom is involved. But my daughters are 13 and 15. And the interesting thing is, as we have talked about it, like my daughter the other day said, you know, their school was putting in place a new policy on yoga pants and on, you know, on these tight pants that girls sometimes wear. And, and she just asked me about that, you know, what do you think about that? Why? And then that led into a conversation about guys being more visual.
Yeah.
And then she just asked me out of the blue, why are guys so interested in pornography? She's a freshman in high school.
Sure.
And I was so thankful that she felt the freedom to ask me that question.
Sure.
Right. And so we talk about the purpose and place of sexuality as a good gift from God, but it's not nothing, as our culture sometimes, you know, tries to make it sound like it doesn't have any consequence at all. And it's not everything, which is the other extreme, right? It's the entirety of our identity. And I think just having those matter-of-fact conversations is really good. And I think that especially with our daughters, we can be in a place of responsiveness to answer their questions when they come up. And if we're not shaming, if we're not, you know, shooting them down, they know that they can come and talk to us and ask those questions.
I know that kind of veered off there off topic, but as we were there and we were having that conversation, I know there could be other dads that are listening today wondering, well, how in the world do I have that conversation? And so I think that's some great information there. Let's push that book one more time. That's the reason we had Mr. Holtz on with us today. Adam Holtz, he's author of the book Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. And again, they can purchase that, you said, on Focus on the Family's website.
Yep, focusonthefamily.com, and if you go there, you'll see a tab for our store, and you can find it there.
Awesome, Adam. I plan to purchase my copy, and I hope everybody else does as well. Thank you for your time today.
You bet. So thank you, Seth.
Special thank you goes out to Mr. Adam Holtz for joining us. Make sure you go purchase that book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family by Adam Holtz. You can get it there on the American Family website. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to know more about our church, this week's worship opportunities, go to our website, harvesthumboldt.com. That's harvesthumboldt.com. Thank you for tuning in. God bless you. We'll be back again next week.